to discuss the real issues affecting the Tasman nations, this is Trans-Tasman Talk, jointly produced by the Unshackled.net and RightMinds.nz. Now, here's Tim Wilms in Australia and Dewa DeBoer in New Zealand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk on this 2nd of March 2021. It is 7 p.m. here in Melbourne.
And it is 9 p.m. here in lockdown for the fourth time, Auckland.
You've even beat us here in Melbourne. We've had three lockdowns, albeit we've had more days in lockdown, but the fourth lockdown, or you would say announcement enforcement.
Yeah, this is why it's sort of an continuation of the third. We sort of had a break, and then we suddenly got shoved back into lockdown. Probably as it will turn out to be for a sort of by accident. They got a little bit spooked by a case that they thought was not connected to the existing cluster.
But it sort of was.
But it was. That's right. They just missed a link. They missed some of the contact tracing. So they'd only reached, I think, 80% or something of the close contacts. They had made a mistake with somebody, or somebody hadn't gone in and got a test, or, but I believe that was the case. Somebody hadn't gone in and got a test, and they basically just missed somebody. And then we went straight back into, well, not straight back into the lockdown. So we had our third lockdown start at the end of basically on a midnight on 11:59 p.m. as they like to say on Sunday, because all the cabinet ministers had wanted to attend the big gay out, so they wanted to be there.
This was the announcement of the first lockdown, wasn't it?
The third one, and the first. Well, they sort of did something similar around.
The first lockdown of this cluster.
That's right. That was certainly the case. Yes. Yeah. So that was then. They delayed it. Then this time, they set the cutoff at 6 a.m. On Sunday, and it was because they had made this decision at 9 p.m. and people were out partying at night, and they didn't want to send the people home from partying. There had actually been another Pride parade earlier that day, and there was a big boxing match on. They didn't want to,
was that related to the gay festival?
Yeah. So they didn't want to send anybody home early or sober, so they made sure everybody got to party out the night. Then they set it to 6 a.m. to try and make sure that as many church services as possible would be cancelled in the morning. That was the overall plan there. So the science seems to have interesting choices about when lockdowns are implemented and what is safe and what is not safe.
And wasn't it also coincided, well, Jacinta Ardern, her electorate is in Auckland, and she made sure to travel to Wellington on the Saturday to announce the Auckland lockdown in Wellington.
Yes, that was, yes, that's right. That was with the third lockdown a couple of weeks ago now. This time, I believe she may have been in Wellington, but I'm not really sure. Didn't follow that. The announcement was made from Wellington. To my knowledge, I didn't actually watch the announcement. It was late Saturday night. I was too busy enjoying time with family and friends to do that kind of thing.
Yes, so you've spoken about, and I've looked at, well, you can call the contact tracing isolation direction debacles, and obviously we've had some contact tracing stuff ups in Victoria throughout the course of our year dealing with the pandemic, which was originally 2 weeks to flatten the curve, of course. Now their policy is to isolate contacts of contacts, so primary and secondary contacts, which obviously didn't happen here.
No, so they've invented this new category called Casual Plus, which sounds really weird after, like when I first read it, it was like Casual Plus Contacts. I thought, what's that supposed to mean? If you're like, are you a casual and a contact? But apparently Casual Plus is a category that they invented, which created some confusion because like one of the cases they believe came from like a mother from one of these school children, as this was an outbreak from a local school here, not too far down the road from where I am, as I mentioned in last week's show or the week before that, that I sort of cycle past it almost all very, very close to it almost every day. But one of the mothers of the children had gone for a walk and had met somebody else and apparently passed it on to them. And then they had a worker at the local KFC basically go to work, and they were positive, and that triggered this lockdown. And so this family got the blame because, or I believe two separate families got the blame. One of them because the mother went out for a walk, and the other one because one of the children went to work. And they got the blame from Jacinda. You know, she was very, very upset with them, very grumpy, totally not taking any, like not accepting any responsibility for the fact that their contact tracing system and the border system failed miserably. People outside, obviously outside of Auckland, are very, very angry. People in Auckland are very, very angry. So suddenly the team of 5 million, we're all in this together, has turned into a hate fest at these families. But then they've actually come out now and said that they were not told to isolate. So the members of this family have had to come out and say, that they didn't get a message saying to isolate. The text that they were actually sent said that as casual plus contacts, they didn't necessarily need to test and isolate. And the Ministry of Health says that it sends letters, sent them a letter that they didn't get. So that's how our contact tracing system works.
Well, like actual through the mail, like it's not like they not sent a them actual message. Mail. I thought we were bad in Victoria with them sending contact tracing information between health outlets through fax, but actually mailing to say you need to isolate. Like...
exactly. So
it ain't called snail mail for nothing.
And they sent them text messages. They didn't send anybody around to their homes, anything like that. In fact, if you were right down the down the bottom of this article that you've got open here, it mentions the metrics that contact tracers are reaching about 67% of Māori, and for the rest of the population, they're only reaching about 52% within 4 days. And the target is 80% within 4 days.
That's so, that's appalling.
Exactly. So, people who are angry at these people are very much misplaced. The blame is 100% with the government. And in most cases, as it appears, the incredibly dangerous and deadly, virus manifests itself as the sniffles. You know, one person went off to the gym. You know, people are angry, oh, this guy went to the gym. Well, he didn't feel like he was sick, which is why he went to the gym, right? This girl went to work because she felt fine.
Yeah, it's all about now the cases now, not the hospitalizations.
That's
or
right. Nobody,
ICU.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no hospitalizations. There's nobody in ICU, and there's certainly nobody who has died of this for a while.
Now, Dawn Browning made a comment, who's a big fan of this show. They're on time because it must be because I've stopped drinking Coke, and the live audience would have seen me drinking a Coke here. And yes, I know that, yes.
You're trying really hard to be less white, Tim.
No, it's just because I love Coke so much. Even though they had this cultural Marxist anti-white training program, I still can't give up my Coke addiction. it's the secret recipe of over 100 years. Like, you've got no other choice but if they didn't have such a good tasting cola, it'd be out of my household.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. Yeah. So one of the interesting things that obviously we've had over the past couple of weeks have also been they call them anti-vaxxer, anti-lockdown protests, which may actually be mild if you read some of the material. You basically have the strangest possible coalition of anti-vax. I'm using this term very, very loosely because there isn't really a different isn't really a different way to describe them. But there's a collection of conspiracy theorists, I guess. That's the old term we're using. We're just going to call them conspiracy theorists. And a weird collection of every single possible conspiracy theorist has formed, and they're still holding out protests, distributing materials, managing to get in the news. I guess we're going to find out what happens if we're going to have a massive information versus disinformation campaign going on in New Zealand in the next few months as the vaccination rollout begins. Because Jacinda Ardern made an interesting announcement about this today. I've sent you the video clip that perhaps you could play
it now.
It's going to show just exactly what's going to go down between these different warring factions.
And I will just reiterate again, this was an individual who had gone through managed isolation. We drum in that messaging around the dangers of COVID pretty diligently for a full 2-week period of sustained propaganda.
Straight from the horse's mouth, pardon the pun.
Certainly, a little breaking under pressure there from the Prime Minister, where accidentally she referred to sustained propaganda, which you will have seen is the title of this episode. And that was probably what they refer to it as behind the scenes, but the communications strategy was probably not to use those words. So the conspiracy theorists will be having fun with that for weeks to come.
That's an even greater slip of the tongue than of course, the New South Wales Health Minister, Brad Hazzard, saying the New World Order of COVID.
That's right. He did it multiple times, didn't he? So.
Yes.
We may have some more gaffes to look forward to.
Yeah, and it's more than 2 weeks of sustained propaganda. This has been going on for a year, which is why I've bought a cake this week to commemorate the one-year anniversary of the beginning of the March 2020 madness, which began in Australia March the 1st with the toilet paper panic, and by March 31st, end of the month, we were under house arrest. And well, you've started March 2021 back to where it all started.
That's right. 2 weeks to flatten the curve began round about a year ago, either this week or next. But the first cases were recorded, I believe, last day of February. Basically to usher in the fourth lockdown, we had the anniversary of the first cases. So happy birthday to COVID. Happy birthday to lockdowns. I hope everybody's really enjoying the celebrations.
It hasn't been a very nice week. Pardon the pun.
You're having a good night tonight.
I thought I should do some more props on Unshackled shows.
You're certainly enjoying the fact that our positions are finally reversed, where I'm the one locked down and you're the one that's living free in Victoria.
Oh, well, I would in no way sort of, rub it in or taunt you. I might to say a West Australian Mark McGowan fanboy, but not to, because I know that you didn't vote for Jacinta back in October.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, her landslide re-election victory. Well, you get what you voted for, you get the political leaders you deserve.
That's right. Democracy is the principle that people know what they want and they deserve to get it good and hard. One of my favorite quotes from a comedian. I like it very much.
over the weekend, well, actually on Friday and Saturday of last week, there were protests outside the Federal Health Minister Greg Hunt's office against the mandatory as possible but still voluntary coronavirus vaccines. His office is in Somerville, which is just down the road from me in Melbourne southeast suburbs. So I know it's his office is in like an outdoor shopping center. It's a really weird area for a MP's office. So they were peaceful. Both of the protests. The police there, they just set up a perimeter around Greg Hunt's office. But the problem with that is that it made it difficult for the Coles delivery vans to get through because the road was blocked off. But they got there in the end. The reason I said this last night. The reason I believe that the protests were peaceful is because the police there were out of the jurisdiction of Luke Cornelius, who of course called the anti-lockdown protesters batshit crazy tinfoil hat brigades, and of course all the police aggression has come in the CBD where the police are under his command.
Mm-hmm. I see a comment here in the entropy chat. Which for the YouTubers, the link is in the earlier on in the chat. But from Savage Nobles and Mary Peasants, he's mentioned here that anti-lockdown protests have been very diverse. And that was sort of something I was trying to get at before. I didn't quite make my point to say that was the strange coalition of anti-lockdown protesters and conspiracy theorists have been an incredibly diverse bunch of people. And I see... as they add more and more logos of more and more different groups, you're getting, some of these so-called far-right groups with mixed in with like Maori separatist organizations all protesting against lockdowns and vaccines and whatever else. So it's all strange and humorous to watch from a distance.
Well, the Melbourne anti-lockdown, anti-mandatory vaccine protests are largely female-powered here in Melbourne. So obviously there's a gender diversity, gender quotas there.
Certainly. Our vaccine rollout has finally started. We've got apparently all of the frontline workers who want to be inoculated have received the first jab. Other emergency staff have had it offered to them this week, and apparently South Auckland is going to be prioritized in the coming months. So if anybody out there would like to, you know, jump the queue or anything like that, my spot in the I'm willing to give up my spot in the queue. But if send me an email with a bid, and whoever sends the highest bid in can have my spot, being a privileged South Auckland or underprivileged South Aucklander who will be prioritized for the vaccine.
Yeah, that is very selfless of you.
Mm. Well, that's certainly motivated by altruism, and you know, it's no real rush for me. So if you're in need, in great danger, please let me know. I can hook you up.
Well, we're in the second week of the vaccine rollout. We've had two shipments of the Pfizer vaccine. There's been a few hiccups with that. First, a doctor in Brisbane giving two aged care residents four times the required dose. But thankfully, as far as we know, they're okay. Those two, one was an 88-year-old man, one was a 94-year-old woman. And there was apparently 25 vials of vaccine that were spoiled in Melbourne's southwest in Werribee. We had the first shipment of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is, I don't know where we're importing it because we're making it locally here in Melbourne, but the vaccine stats have come out, and of course the narrative is they're not being injected as fast enough as they're being distributed. So New South Wales, apparently they've injected 74% of the vaccines distributed to them, but Victoria only 30%, Queensland 22%. So the conservative right-wing commentators are saying you need to inject people more.
that seems to be a little bit sadly where the commentary has gone from our so-called opposition parties here, where it's like, you need to be, you know, like we need to get the police to put their jackboots on people's necks and get them to comply and go out and fine people.
Follow the Melbourne model. Have they actually issued, what is the fine?
There are no fines. There are no penalties here. Some of these people, the cases who we've been discussing this evening, apparently may have broken the law even by going out, although, like I said, it's not abundantly clear they were even told what they were supposed to do. But yeah, again, there will be no penalties for them. The only warning I've seen, apparently a home church was given a written warning on Sunday, so 2 days ago now. And that's the only thing that I've heard of, but there are no fines and there are no penalties.
Well, as you'd be fully aware, there are significant penalties in Victoria for violating the Chief Health Officer's directions under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act, $1,652 fine for breaching the COVID directions, $200 for not wearing a mask when required. And of course, you've seen Victoria Police, various Victoria Police stomping on people's heads and choking them. And Daniel Andrews, is pushing through another extension to the state of emergency powers under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act, because we're the only state, thankfully, where the legislature has to pass legislation to extend the state of emergency. The other states don't. Back in September 2020, I should say, Dan Andrews got a 6-month extension to the state of emergency, which is due to expire March 15th, with the three crossbench stooges, as I call them. Andy Medic, leader of the Animal Justice Party, you recall he's the one with two transgender children, amazingly. Fiona Patton, who Bernie Finn, MLC, calls Satan's little helper. And says that she's not the leader of the Reason Party, but the Treason Party. And then, of course, Samantha Ratnam, the leader of the Greens, obviously with a name like that, there's lots of plays on the rat in her name, given that she's supporting this legislation. And it's looking due to pass tonight. Dan Andrews, he didn't just ask for a 6-month state of emergency, another 6 months, but 9 months until December 15th, 2021. They've got some, the Three Stooges crossbench have got some concessions. If we go further down here, under the deal with the crossbenchers, the government said it would establish a detention review officer who would aim to examine fines within 24 hours of someone requiring a reassessment. The government has also agreed to reduce COVID-19 fines for minors. The Victorian Greens have been pressured the government to make COVID-19 legal framework less punitive for children. And if we go further down here, Ms. Patton said the government committed to creating specific legislation provided for public health rules allowable under the state of emergency. She said these laws will be developed in less than 9 months, meaning the state of emergency may not be needed for the maximum period. So she, as The Age recorded last week, she wants the government to implement a traffic light system before announcing a statewide lockdown. Well, we all hope that there's never another statewide lockdown. And she also wants the right to protest to be enshrined in the state of emergency directions, because I think we can all agree that freedom of political expression should never be suspended. And even in places such as Israel, where there was a state of emergency COVID restrictions, they never suspended the right to freedom of assembly for political matters, for obvious reasons. I mean, the state of Israel was created due to a government that politically persecuted activism, assembly and speech.
And this is as I said, the New Zealand government and the New Zealand police specifically haven't taken a punitive response anywhere, but especially around protest. Again, there have not been any, I don't believe they've, so for other cases, other breaches, they issue citations or verbal warnings, but certainly not for protests here. Right. But yeah, it's quite, bizarre reading the fines for minors in the Victorian legislation, you know, certainly feels like a very, very different part of the world.
Yes, it's been a very dark year in Victorian political, or you just say Victorian civil society as well, and political history as well. But we did go back on Friday night, 11:59 PM, to our previous COVID-safe settings before Christmas, which means that you can have 30 guests to your private home per day. And you can have gatherings of 100 outdoors, and masks are only required in so-called high-risk settings, such as public transport, large retail settings, and also hospitals and aged care facilities. I couldn't help the irony today that Dan Andrews released the findings of a Victorian Royal Commission into mental health. And one of the recommendations should have been, if you want to stop the deterioration of mental health in Victoria, don't lock down the state and create a police state.
Certainly a good place to start, but I suspect that was not in the recommendations.
No, it wasn't. But it's kind of one that should be obvious to most people.
Certainly would be.
You've been alerted to this development in Victoria as well, that obviously we have this federal parliamentary inquiry into extremism, which federal Labor Shadow Home Affairs Minister Christina Keneally, well, she'd been lobbying for an inquiry into far-right extremism. And one of the organisations in the sights of those wanting tougher government response to far right groups. One of the groups in their sites is the National Socialist Network, which its most prominent spokesperson is Thomas Sowell. There was a feature on A Current Affair on them last night because they went on that hiking trip to the Grampians in central Victoria. He did Hitler salutes. They praised the Ku Klux Klan and also photographed themselves at night burning a cross. Tom Sowell was quite upset that they didn't interview him for the story. So he went to Channel 9 in Melbourne to confront them about it, and he got into a altercation with a African security guard at Channel 9 because he accused the guard of grabbing the throat of his cameraman, Jacob Hershner. You can't tell from the footage that Tom Sowell uploaded whether that's the case. His cameraman is Jacob Hershner, a prominent and self-proclaimed local neo-Nazi, said to the security guard, "Dance, monkey," and then the guard said, "Watch yourself." And there's sort of the knocking of the camera, and then Tom Sowell punches him, wrestles him to the ground, and punches him a few times again. And obviously, this altercation has received quite prominent news coverage, given that, well, it happened outside a news station. And obviously, you've seen the footage. I played it last night.
Yeah, I did watch the Channel 9 clip and the footage that you had been discussing. Certainly, interesting to have that attached to the end of their desire to have clamp down on far right violence and extremism, and of course the extremists and the violence turn up right at the end of the segment. We discussed that a few weeks ago on the show that I was quite surprised and shocked that you had a National Socialist Network burning crosses and running around the Australian countryside when you've got all these so-called Antifa groups harassing conservatives and libertarians. Well, I guess you can see why they wouldn't want to confront the actual neo-Nazis.
So Nine News in their 6 p.m. news posted an update where apparently Tom Sewell and Jacob Hershnett are on the run, that apparently Victoria Police haven't laid any charges yet. This story includes that Daniel Andrews condemned the sickening attack, so did federal Labor MP Bill Shorten. It has at the end here, the security guard is now recovering at home after initially being taken to hospital. Nine News understands he is doing okay under the circumstances. So Nine gave the CCTV vision of the attack to the police. That'll show us, I guess, a different angle about what the security guard did to Jacob Hershnett, the cameraman, after he said dance monkey. Because we've only got, Tom Sewell posted his, the footage filmed by Jacob himself to his Telegram channel. So there's obviously still a lot to play out, and you can expect Victoria Police will throw the book at Tom Sewell, given his position, and also the fact that it looks a clear disproportionate response to an alleged act of aggression against his cameraman.
Oh, certainly. So we shall see where Australian National Socialists end up, but currently on the front page of the news and possibly on the run. It's going to be it'll be interesting to see where if the police do press charges. That's basically going to determine what the CCTV footage says, right? If they believe that it was justified, then they wouldn't press charges. If they do press charges, it'll probably be because it's going to end very, very badly for Thomas Sewell. Not to be confused with Thomas Sowell, who's the American professor quite the opposite of your Australian Thomas Sewell.
Well, Thomas Sowell is African American, for one.
for a start, yeah. Exactly, yeah. I see a comment here from Origin saying the security guard did do the dance, the dance monkey comments. I tried to look this up, wondering. I thought, okay, well, coming from actual National Socialists, it was probably intended to be a racial slur. But if it were anybody else, you might give them the benefit of the doubt. But I believe it is an Australian pop culture phenomenon.
Well, it's a 2019 song by Tones and I, which was incredibly popular, Dance Monkey. It spent 24 weeks at number one on the ARIA charts. It catapulted Tones and I to superstardom. So you hope that because their song was used in this context, that they don't ban the song like they banned Catcher in the Rye after John Lennon got canceled.
She's going to be cancelled now for inspiring neo-Nazi hate crimes and doing racist dog whistles.
Well, you hope not, but yeah, they did ban Catcher in the Rye because it apparently inspired Mark Chapman, who fatally shot John Lennon.
what I saw, interesting news article that came up from New Zealand after I had been looking at this, at the links that you had sent me, was actually a Newsroom article by Newsroom Pro, which is a paid article, but it reminded me of an event that had taken place in New Zealand this week, with our parliament passing a bill to change the local composition of local councils, or at least for ratepayers to be able to object to it. But Willie Jackson, who's an MP for the Labor Party, called his national and ACT counterparts a total waste of time and space when it came to advocating for their own Maori people. So he was complaining that you're not truly Maori if you're not advocating for the Maori people.
It's basically like Biden's, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black.
Vote for me, you're black, yeah. And it was just striking to me anyway, how obviously at least this, you know, this kind of ethnocentrism is a core part of New Zealand politics, which is slightly ironic in that context. But the article that you've got up there has to do with a bill that was passed saying that local councils had the ability to set up separate Maori wards, so you could have segregated councils in throughout all of local government here, much like at the national level we have separate Maori seats where you can be on a separate electoral roll, either if you're Maori or anybody else, and we then elect MPs based on, you know, which race you want to vote for, essentially, which one you identify with. And they were going to do the same to local councils. They created a provision, I believe nearly two decades ago, where councils could choose to set those up. But while changes made to local government representation could usually be vetoed by even just one person, like if one person would turn up to a committee to say, no, you can't cancel, you can't shut down this local board, or no, you can't create a new local board for whatever reason, they'd have to listen to them. When they set these up to have racially segregated wards, they realized there might be a bit of opposition. So they created the possibility of a referenda to be held, singular one referendum. And this referendum in a local area could be held if 5% of the ratepayers would sign a petition. And then if 50% voted against establishing Maori wards, then it wouldn't happen. And that provision is now being taken away. So there's no ability for anybody to object to the establishment of segregated local representation. And it's theoretically possible for a council to overturn it, probably extremely unlikely, but there's no way for anybody to object to it anymore, as they might object to other changes in local representation. And that's something that the National Party have vowed to repeal. It was pushed through under urgency by the Labour government, and considered to be a huge victory for those wanting increased Maori representation, because currently they're about 15% of the population and they have about 15% of the representation. But that's
15% with Maori ancestry.
Yes, with Maori ancestry, and 15% of those, they're proportionally well represented on local government, but usually what they're after is kind of a co-governance 50% input. So the local iwi, or at least some members of the local iwi, may want to be able to call 50% of the shots. And that's sort of what they're gearing for or trying to get with these wards. How effective it will be, we shall see. But it's kind of a sort of minority rule setup where you have a small percentage of the population who perhaps might say, well, this is our, you know, this is our ancestral homeland, this is our ethnostate, as it were, and we want to be able to have the majority say, or at least an equal say.
Which is usually called a gerrymander.
Yeah, it's some kind of gerrymander or minority rule, as it's known in, in Rhodesia, South Africa. People accuse Israel of the same thing. I mean, same thing in the territory run by the Israelis. Jews are the minority, at least in what they occupy. Obviously, the proper political Israel, Jews are the majority. But there's a reason why they don't annex all of the Palestinian territories. And so, it's basically a kind of system where can be good or bad, I guess, but that is at least what we're setting up in New Zealand, which is a strange kind of segregated politics where the purpose of at least this the group the lobby groups pushing for this is a type of minority rule where Maori leaders would have the majority say in New Zealand.
We've got a few more comments from Savage Nobles and Merry Peasants in Entropy. Now, if you want to make your comment more prominent or ask a question, Entropy, click on the link is the way to go. We also have a poll tonight, which is who is the real New Zealand leader of the opposition? Is it Judith Collins of the National Party or is it David Seymour of the ACT Party, which is what you were alluding to before? David Seymour is trying to, basically outdo Judith Collins in saying what the government should do to contain this COVID cluster.
And also on this issue that I've been talking about here with the local government change was something that David Seymour referred to as the apartheid bill. So he's certainly going all in trying to outdo Judith Collins, who simply said she's going to repeal it because it's undemocratic. He says it's straight out apartheid.
So Savage Noble and Merry Peasants has said mostly peaceful punches to the black face while he's filming for his Big Shot Hollywood documentary. And has said Thomas Sowell for life, my hero. His book, Basic Economics, that's a good introduction to economics. And his question is to you, Dewey, do you remember Joe Trinder and Barfoot and Thompson's Tim O'Shea from the Pro Freedom of Speech Rally 2018, Otah Square, Auckland? Well, they're back at the anti-lockdown protests.
Yes, I have seen some footage of these anti-lockdown protests. I guess the usual, troublemakers are at it. But in this case, thankfully, something I'm very, very far away from, and I'm not a fan of either side. Don't have a dog in this fight, as it were. So I'm just watching from a distance. And if people ask me what to do, stay home and get on with your life. And they've promised the vaccines won't be mandatory, so hold them to it. And there's not really. I mean, there's no. What are you going to protest for? It's not mandatory anyway. They're not going to stop lockdowns because they're so popular. What are you protesting?
And would the government ever lie to you?
No, they wouldn't. They'd never do that.
They're the one source of truth, which is that was made by.
Actually, it was one of her cabinet ministers, perhaps.
Was it Chris Hipkins?
Chris Hipkins, who made the original one source of truth comment. But again, you can hold them to that. But as long as you're saying this is the case, there's no point protesting them saying it. So that's why this is why I don't really see this accomplishing anything, because there's no goal except to get yourself in trouble, perhaps.
In Australian politics, a sign that obviously COVID is receding from the headlines with the vaccination rollout, it's the parliamentary rape scandals, which is obviously triggered by that former coalition staffer Brittany Higgins, who has alleged that she was raped by a colleague in Defence Minister Linda Reynolds' office a few weeks before the 2019 federal election. On Wednesday last week, Linda Reynolds was due to address the National Press Club, but that was cancelled because she was hospitalised due to a pre-existing heart condition on the advice of a cardiologist, because obviously she'd been under a lot of scrutiny about what she knew and what she did, and she actually broke down in the Senate last Monday answering an unrelated question. So she's been out of action this past week. Maurice Payne, the foreign minister, is also now the defence minister, who was previously the defence minister. Late on Friday night, Louise Milligan of the ABC broke that there'd been an historical allegation of rape against a sitting cabinet minister from a woman when she was 16 in 1988. The woman is now deceased. She committed suicide last year. The Australian Federal Police said today that they're not going to pursue the investigation due to lack of evidence. This is an unnamed cabinet minister. and it's just broken now that he's likely to out himself tomorrow and make a statement to Parliament. So be quite a dramatic day tomorrow in federal politics. But obviously, there can be no police prosecution since the alleged victim is dead. But of course, he can be found guilty in the court of public opinion, which of course is how things, how these sorts of things work today, trial by media.
Absolutely. absolutely the case. And yeah, it's nothing really to add to it because it's all pure speculation. Perhaps the story may come back next week, depending on what happens tomorrow.
Well, we had on Sunday evening, Sarah Henderson, who is a Liberal senator. She's actually a former ABC journalist herself. The only former ABC journalist to become a Liberal politician. Most of them become Labor politicians. Yeah. But she referred to the Australian Federal Police, an allegation of rape against a sitting Labor MP from a letter she received. Most people believe that this is the already surfaced allegation against Bill Shorten, who used to be the federal Labor leader. Kathy Sheriff is her name. She alleged that she was raped by Bill Shorten at a Labor youth camp. The Victoria Police, they have investigated this claim previously, but said that there was no case to answer. But I cannot note the irony of the Believable Women people saying, "Oh well, Sarah Henderson, oh she's just political muckraking by raising this because Victoria Police said there's no case to answer." So basically saying because Victoria Police said no case to answer, we don't believe this woman. And Victoria Police don't have the greatest track record in pursuing historical sex allegations, given they decided to pursue Cardinal George Pell for historical child sex abuse charges, tried him twice, got him convicted, but it got quashed by the High Court. So you don't want Victoria Police, and also based on their lockdown enforcement, to be judge and jury.
No, certainly not. And we had you mentioned the Labor youth camp. We also have problems with Labor youth camps.
Yes, we've covered that as well.
They tend to get buried in the courts anyway if they get there. So there's not much more that goes on there, including, I think even last week, the allegation of the Speaker of our House, Trevor Mallard, accusing somebody of being a rapist and still keeping his job, even though he got the whole thing wrong. So yeah, it's never a pretty fight to get into there. We shall see what happens here, but it seems like in Australia it's sort of turned into open season based on what happened with the staffer, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's become very politically toxic and polarizing. And there's calls for an independent inquiry into the historical rape allegation. Malcolm Turnbull is calling for one. So is Anthony Albanese. But Anthony Albanese has this nickname, Each Way Elbow, that was given to him by Paul Murray on Sky News, because he's saying Scott Morrison needs to take action, but it's not up to me to decide what that action should be. And if you ask me what I do in that situation, it's a hypothetical, so I can't answer that. So, which is the ultimate cop-out.
Certainly is. We're just coming into the last 10 minutes or so of the show, so please send through any super chats or other questions that you've got. We've just got one from Origin. $3. I'll read this one out. Re-COVID, could we talk about how the authorities prioritize safety and security at the highest value, ignoring the many other values that make up the human experience? Something we're seeing again, actually experiencing again in Auckland at the moment, and even throughout the rest of New Zealand, with large gatherings restricted, weddings cancelled. For instance, I have an acquaintance, very loosely connected, who's had to cancel her wedding twice now. So planned during, you know, what would have been the third lockdown, cancelled, rescheduled, rescheduled wedding, planned, cancelled again. Just this week, imagine, you know, the kind of damage that's doing to people simply trying to plan weddings. Again, people missing out.
Yeah, I would advise people not to get married during this time. Or if you really need to get married, just elope and have extravagant wedding later.
Well, that's essentially what you would have to do. But what happens is the people stop living the human experience. I'm even seeing now the interruption of schools. Again, we cancel all the schools here. School children, again, they're missing out on their learning. In the UK, some of them have missed out on an entire year of schooling. Right? That's permanent damage to their brains, developmental and psychological damage. They can never recover, especially younger children are never going to recover from an entire year of their life lost. This is forever. Whereas obviously these same people have a 99.9997% chance of surviving COVID, which is, I think, even higher or on par with the flu for most of these age groups. So certainly this so-called saving lives, it extends the lives of a few, but even putting it further into a Christian sense, right, just simply extending somebody's life is not good. Because the soul should take priority. And it's the same thing we see just even in churches, downplaying their spiritual needs, downplaying the holding of services. Obviously, plenty of churches around Auckland, especially in South Auckland, continued with services this past week. But churches in Canada are taking massive fines.
They've imprisoned a pastor.
Exactly, yeah. And then you see other Christians who are like, oh no, the government's supposed to be saving people's lives. Well, it doesn't matter if as a Christian, you think what's the number one priority is people's souls. Even if you are not a Christian, hopefully you think that people simply being able to live their lives, and not be permanently damaged, by the government, it should have been unthinkable, but instead, we've been caught up in worshiping the science, which has basically said, we can do all this to extend the lives of the elderly by an average of 9 months.
Yeah, and going, you talked about the children, but focusing on the elderly, the apparent strategy to prolong their lives is to keep them locked up in their nursing home rooms, not allowed to see friends and family, which has been going on in the UK for nearly a year now.
Right. And they had the worst results too, right? Strictest lockdown, highest fatalities, UK.
And the federal government announced the finding of the Aged Care Royal Commission, because there's been a long history of neglect and abuse. My advice to people would be, don't send your parents to an aged care facility, because the past year has showed what a isolated, horrible end of life experience it can be.
And this should be hopefully a good lesson to a lot of people, for instance, that perhaps as you've mentioned already, aged care facilities, not a really good place to send your parents. Maybe you should look after them yourself, right? Sending your kids to a government propaganda institute was never a good idea. But if you've just had them, witnessed the damage that's done over the past year, hey, maybe you should find something else, right? Maybe you should be homeschooling them or finding some form of education where you're more involved and you can be more involved. If you're, whatever your work is, perhaps make sure it's something that you can do that's not actually requiring you to be reliant on the government allowing you to get there and be able to do your work. We can stretch this out. So for many people, it should be a lesson. Perhaps your big mega church isn't really the answer, because they don't really care. They're creating a product that people consume online, and nobody's turning up. They don't really care if people turn up or not. They're not willing to get out and say, hey, this is important, because to them it's not really. So whatever it is, you know, a good opportunity to change, change your life, make some changes for the better. Use it as a learning opportunity. Don't waste this. What is in all things the providence of God? Don't waste it. Learn it. Learn from it.
And we've often reminded people that government emergency measures, they tend not to be removed. And evidence of this surfaced today in the midst of the WA state election, where Mark McGowan, the Labor Premier, is likely going to be re-elected in a landslide due to his hard border closure policy. He said today that he wants border controls to continue post the pandemic. He said that he was in discussions with WA Police Commissioner about what measures would be legal, including vehicle searches and potentially even recording personal details. We obviously have a significant reduction in meth usage in Western Australia, and part of that, of course, is the measures we've already taken with the meth action plan, but also the border measures. The opposition leader, Zach Kirkup, has said that you'd be treating every visitor to WA as a potential meth dealer, and the High Court has passed down a second ruling against Clive Palmer that the WA hard border was legal in the midst of the pandemic. So clearly Mark McGowan thinks, emboldened by that High Court decision, that he can basically have border controls in WA forever.
And the people, the voters will love it, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, they're going to re-elect him in a landslide. They re-elected Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk comfortably, despite her cruel border closures, which actually contributed to the death of an unborn child and meant that many people couldn't say goodbye to loved ones.
And that's how it works. Fear is seems to be the greatest motivator for people. It feels like a strange application of the Machiavellian line of was if you can't be loved, be feared. It seems to be you'll be popular either way.
And to finish off, March the 2nd is also another anniversary, 25th anniversary of the election of the Howard government in 1996, which is often seen as the gold standard for modern governance in Australia. Well, the fact that John Howard was Prime Minister for 11 and a half years, and since his defeat in 2007, no Prime Minister has served a full term. We, of course, in Australia have been infamous for our leadership spills and coups, and it led to your then Prime Minister John Key saying, if you invited the Australian Prime Minister here, you wouldn't know who's going to turn up.
And it was I'm trying to remember how many Australian Prime Ministers John Key survived, but it may have been at least half a dozen.
Was it four? Yes, four. Yes. So, obviously, we had a less interfering government during the era of the Howard government. I say less interfering because they still interfered quite a bit. Obviously, post September 11, the Howard government gave birth to the modern national security state, which obviously, with the inquiry we just talked about, wants even more power, and also began the dole out of middle class welfare as well.
Mm-hmm. And one other anniversary I thought worth mentioning was also that it has been 9 years since the death of Andrew Breitbart. And many people in the chat perhaps will know Andrew Breitbart, but in many ways he died in a
freak occurrence.
That's right. But the important thing to remember is not his death, but his legacy, what he achieved. Obviously, Breitbart.com, and in many ways the online alternative media really was spurred on by
Andrew Breitbart. By Breitbart.
Yeah, certainly. And I guess to a certain extent, I was a lot younger at the time, but I certainly remember him, hearing about his death. Just a few weeks ago also, perhaps something I'll comment on in an article on the website, rightminds.nz, was the death of Rush Limbaugh. Many people may know Rush Limbaugh, or probably less well-known outside, at least in Australia and New Zealand, than Andrew Breitbart was. But Rush Limbaugh was probably the father of the alternative media, in that he started talk radio, conservative talk radio, and started the ability to break through the mainstream media hold, which was obviously followed up by Fox News, Roger Ailes, and Andrew Breitbart being the one we remember. So definitely sad, but also, you know, that this is what happens. People get old and they pass away, and the torch hopefully is passed on.
And they die of other diseases and cancers other than COVID.
Oh, that's right. None of them died of COVID, certainly the case.
Well, we've still got the giant in Australia, Alan Jones, who's continuing to be outspoken with his Sky News program, even though he's not on the radio. He's pushing 80 now. So we've still got Alan, who's on, well, just about now.
Yeah. Certainly, very good. And so we'll wrap up the show. We've just pushed over an hour. I'll plug the alternative social media, alternative media sites too, in addition to the website. I am on Telegram. You can find me there at Diwa De Boer. You can find me on Gab at Diwa. Also, the channel here is mirrored on Odyssey, although the Trad Tasman Talk archive is not at the moment. I have inquired with Odyssey about their live streaming beta, which they've said they will get back in touch with me when they're running that again later. I'm guessing maybe in a couple of months. So we will at some point have a stream, alternative stream on a non-YouTube successor, we shall see.
I've signed up my channel and the Unshackled to Odyssey, and also Blair Cottrell, Australian patriot, he started posting vlogs to Odyssey. He seems to like it there, and obviously the more sort of people go over there, prominent people, then that starts a more of a migration.
Exactly. And the I mean, the YouTube mirroring there is very useful. Like, there are, even if it's Tim Pool or Jordan Peterson or whoever, all of their channels are mirrored on Odyssey. And I use it more so as well for crypto news. And if you're into cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, that's kind of where it started. And that's the thing I like about Odyssey. It's not a niche political platform. It is truly across the spectrum in terms of actually interesting content that's not political. So,
all right. Thank you, everyone, for watching in the Unshackled and Right Minds chats. Thank you for all your comments. Thank you also, Origin, for the super chat. And of course, we'll be back same time next week. And remember, this show is also available in a podcast form on the Wilmsfront podcast feed. You can, of course, find me on Telegram, Gab, and also on the unshackled.net as well. We're all on the same platforms now, it seems.
Convergence. There's some convergence happening.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good. And same goes for me. Some of my writing are up on the Right Minds website. I try and get something out once a week, and I send out a newsletter once a month in addition to the shows. So we shall see you all next week. Feel free to get in touch outside of that, obviously, but it's great to see you in the live chat, and may you have another interesting week, and may I see you outside of lockdown in 7 days. We shall see.
Yes, fingers crossed. Hopefully, if they find another case, Jacinta doesn't re-hit the panic button.
There haven't been any cases in the past 2 or 3 days, so okay. We shall see. They've said, oh, it's okay, don't worry, we'll get some tomorrow. So we shall see.
All right, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad Tasman Talk. To keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.